Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Trust and Believe. I'm your host, Sean T, and today's guest, Arnel Cavario, is going to be talking about toxic positivity. He has a doctorate in occupational therapy from USC, and he is going to give you tips on how to be positive in communicating with other people and communicating with yourself. You all need to hear this because we've all been guilty of toxic positivity. So get ready to trust and believe on how to communicate in a better way.
Somebody say hell yeah.
No. What's up?
He's better than Oprah.
Come on, y'all.
This is Sean T, and it's time to trust and believe.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
First and foremost, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Sean. First of all, it's good to see your face. Just so many exciting things happening right now. The first and foremost being your birthday that just passed. So, yeah, it's always good to be in your good energy. And yeah, I just love seeing you. All is good.
Awesome. So, all right. So one of the reasons why I'm so excited to have you on the podcast is there are a lot of people out there who are very nice. Like, there are people out there who are very nice, but you are nice from the core. I don't think there's a mean bone in your body. Maybe there is, but, and I've always just been, you know, enamored by the way you treat people, by the way you speak to people. And it just comes across so positive. And like, I know not everyone's perfect, but even just your social media is just so giving. And then, you know, we had a conversation a few weeks ago just about positivity. And I actually saw you talk about toxic positivity. And it's been on my mind a lot lately. And it's been really kind of stressing me out because there are people that I see that I know, and this may sound a little judgmental, but the way that they talk to people just seems a little more condescending than helpful. And then I hear people throwing around the term toxic positivity. And so I kind of wanted to really dive into that so people out there can really know the message that they're getting from people and knowing how to kind of interpret the other person's intentions, because that's where a lot of confusion happens. So can you give me the definition of toxic positivity?
So we both know, because we do believe in positivity. We believe in, you know, spreading good energy and, you know, affirming ourselves and helping other people affirm themselves in their own words, just spreading good vibes. But toxic positivity is when you minimize another person's experience by basically asserting your positivity over their real lived human experience, right? So some of those things come across like, look on the bright side, or, you know, I'm guilty of using this good vibes only, you know what I mean? Where maybe the intent is to, you know, bring a lot of light and love into the space, but when it's done in a way that minimizes other people or that shuts other people's other possibilities of what they're living or experiencing out, and it comes across, like you said, condescending or minimizing, that's where it's really harmful. And especially during this time, after what we, the year we had last year and continued into this year, where it's really a moment of a lot of people going through different struggles and a lot of people going through radical healing as well. It's really, 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 really important that we don't step into those realms where we try not to, of that toxic positivity, because it's really an overassertion of what I'm feeling over what you're feeling. You know what I mean?
If you could give me like an example that you see on social media that people are doing that you're like, that's not necessarily being positive, it's toxic positivity.
When like a news comes out and someone lost their job, or, you know, there, or something, you know, an incident happened that we see on the news and someone says, look on the bright side, it could be worse. Or, you know, I mean, that things like that, where instead of creating that space for understanding, you know, allowing people to grieve or just process loss or something, they're basically saying it's all good. There's always something to be grateful for. You know what I mean? Yes, of course there's always something to be grateful for. But in this moment right now, we're expressing something that we're experiencing that's challenging. And a lot of times we talk a lot about privilege, right? So sometimes when people are doing this toxic positivity, it's almost over asserting or using their privilege in a way that isn't helpful, but really harmful.
I think that it's so interesting. It's one of the places where I just realized where we align in our goodness for people, because that's one of the things that really frustrates me about the human experience. Like if I need to go through an emotion, or if I'm, you know, upset about something and people are like, it could be worse, or, you know, you don't have to be mad because, you know, at least you have a car. And I'm just like, so why are you negating my emotion? This has nothing to do with the car. This is nothing to do with the fact that I have a house. This is everything to do with my experience right now. And I've always been looking for the understanding to that, because a lot of people think that that's okay. But I think that that is okay for people because they're not experiencing that at that moment.
That's exactly like, and we hear these terms like tone deaf, right? Where they're just like, or the blind spots, right? Where because they don't experience that, they don't, their human lived experience can't connect to whatever someone is sharing. They just gloss over it like, it's all good. You're going to be okay. You know, look forward to brighter days ahead, you know, versus really like, okay, you know what? I don't understand that. Can you help me understand that? How can I support you? That's one of the things I admire a lot about you, is you're all about communication, you know, your direct communication. And I feel that if people were more willing to hold space, to truly hold space for someone in their totality of their experience, we wouldn't see a lot of these toxic positivity incidences where people are just more about telling you what they think versus listening to what you have to say, you know. And, you know, good communication is not just expressing, but it's also holding space and being a really good active listener too. Right.
But what do you say to those people? Because there will be people that combat toxic positivity, right? They'll say, oh, well, you got into a car wreck, you know, your car's total, but at least you're okay. They're saying, well, I'm just telling them to look at the bright side. Why is it bad for me to tell somebody to look at the bright side? How would you respond to that person?
I think there's like just such a difference between saying, I'm glad you're okay, you know, tell me, how are you feeling, versus it's the over assertion of what you're thinking over holding space for what they're really experiencing. I feel like that's the thing, is like, we're sometimes in such a fast paced world that we don't always hold space. You know what I mean? We're just quick to tell our opinion, give our advice, but sometimes we just need to like really get into the practice of just listening. Right. Giving. Yeah, you can affirm someone, you can say something positive in the situation, but also holding space for the challenging parts of that situation, the challenging parts of one's journey. You know, I think that's why I really, really like believe that the best communicators are the ones who use both their mouth and their ears. Right.
Well, it's interesting because I was having a conversation about communication. And I was just even talking about at a time where I wasn't a great communicator, especially between me and Scott. And a lot of it was dealing with my own, people call them demons, or my own baggage. It's just really interesting because I think there is a lot of times where we only listen, and we either only listen to ourselves and not listen to the other person, or, you know, to your point, like if you don't hear somebody, then you can't feel somebody. It's like almost like if someone is like being toxically positive toward me, I then have to in some way validate why I feel this way.
Okay, so we're all human. And so the things that come out of our mouths come from love-based or fear-based, right? And so sometimes like when we're expressing what we're feeling, whether we choose love-based, which is an open space of understanding, feeling like we can just express freely and safely, or we're having to like over-explain because we're fearing being misunderstood, it all depends on the tone and the way the person is asking you the question. Mm-hmm. We'll respond accordingly, right? And so that's where toxic positivity we get in trouble, because they're like sealing off a certain way and making you feel even bad for feeling bad. You know what I mean? When really, if it's coming from a love-based way, instead of saying you should do this, or like look on the bright side, or it's all good, you know, you're stressing out, you know, instead of saying like I'm glad you're okay, but like help me understand, you know, I'm not understanding, I want to know what's going on, you know what I mean, and then opening up that space for understanding, then that like that's when the love based everything fills the space, because I'm gonna respond in a love based way because the person's asking me in a love based way. When someone's more like, I got to get my opinion, or I got to like, oh, I don't have time for this negative energy, so I'm just going to like squish this right now and be like, you should be happy you're alive from that car accident. You know, you walked away good. There's a lot of people that have died in car, you know, that's not really helping the situation. That's asserting like, I only have time for this, so I'm going to tell you what I think. Let's talk about me now, or let's talk about something else, right? And that's what, like when we think about like these new apps, even like Clubhouse, right? And these other ones where, you know, there's a lot more dialogue. I see toxic positivity seeping into those space because people are really trying to assert themselves. And it's interesting where you see people asserting themselves in a way that oppresses other people instead of what you hope would be uplifting and creating spaces for understanding.
So I just kind of want to switch gears, because I don't know if this is toxic positivity or not, but this is another thing that really annoys me. So I have a friend who's moving home, and she's like having trouble moving, and they're like, oh, why are you upset? You're going to have this great house. You're going to have this. We're going to be close to us. And she's like, everybody's so worried about them. They're not worried about the process of my emotion. Is that considered toxic positivity too?
That's a really strong example of it, because life is the ebbs and flows of like joy and grief and processing, right? And so, she might be excited to move with her family. She might be excited about this new house. But she also has to grieve certain things that are different about her life, or certain things that she's also having to let go. And so people need to be given the permission to be happy and grieving at the same time in the same situation, because that's a totality of being a human being. You know, in one situation, we can be overjoyed, grateful, you know, and filled with love, and also at the same time be grieving aspects that are different than we expected. Or still grieving a part that, you know, just is different than we had hoped it would be, you know? And so I feel like we as human beings need to be given permission to experience and express the totality of our human lived experience. It's not, it's never one thing. It's usually a combination of many, many things, right? I always tell people, that's like one of my mantras, like we are the brilliant, we're a mosaic of many different extraordinary parts. Mm. And all of those experience is what makes us special. And some of those parts are happy, strong, vibrant. And some of those other parts, you know, are sad and are healing from trauma, or, you know, is still grieving, you know, and that the totality of all of that is our brilliance, you know, because we can use all of those experiences to help other people, to empathize with other people, you know what I mean, to show up and hold space for people.
Yeah, I was going to say, when she actually told me, are you happy and I want to support you? And I just kind of went, and she actually broke down crying because it was just like a lot for her. And so, you know, my first thing is, oh, well, let's, you know, let's go through this. Let's talk about why you're sad. Let's, you know, and she actually didn't tell me the other story about how everyone else is like negating her feelings. I think it's completely disrespectful for people to overlook the process that she needs for their own happiness. Yeah. It's like, what are you crying for? And it makes me so mad because they don't understand that it definitely leaves someone out there to be lonely. And while, like we talked about before, while you're making this decision because, yeah, maybe the overall positives outweigh the negatives, right, of doing it, there's still sometimes a rough road and it's still sometimes a rough choice. And so,
The optics of it, right? The optics, the everything looking on the outside, looking in looks amazing, right? But when you actually truly hold space, no one held space for her. Yeah. And that's why she had an explosion of emotions, because people were asserting, they were putting their opinions of their, from their lens of the experience, like on her, and not probably holding full patient space for her to really like show up and tell people what's going on. And I'm guilty of it too. I mean, how many times have you like seen someone you haven't seen in a long time, but you're on your way into an event or something and you're like, oh my God, what's up? How are you? But you actually don't really have time for the whole answer. Right. Where you maybe should have said, hey, it's so good to see you. I want to catch up with you later, but I got to run in. Let's make some time for next week. You know what I mean? So sometimes life is a lot of those like, how are you? How are you? But not truly holding the space. And you holding that space for her when the tears come out, that's definitely usually a reflection that no one has truly given her the time she needed to fully express everything that's going on.
I remember when I used to go to Germany and Europe a lot, my German friends would be like, I hate when Americans do that. They're like, Americans say, how are you? And they don't really know. They don't really want, they just should just say what's up or, hi, you know, cause I agree with you. And I've tried to stop doing like, how are you? Unless I can really know how you're doing. So there are a lot of times where I'm just saying, it's good to see you. Or, wow, it's so interesting running into you today. Because I ain't got time to talk to you and I'm not going to act like I do.
Yeah, it's better to be real. And, you know, of course, when you really want to catch up with them, you just say, I'll catch up with you later. You know what I mean?
One of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you about toxic positivity is because of what you do every day. You literally have to be a great listener, a great communicator, and just a great teacher. So can you just tell everyone what you do and like from the time you wake up to the time you come home at night?
Well, the first thing I do when I get up is I give Dustin a kiss.
That better happen.
Right. But I'm a doctor of occupational therapy. So I work in the school systems with kids with special needs. So it's my job as an occupational therapist to help children who have difficulties with either sensory processing or fine motor, like, you know, being able to write or use their scissors or play skills, help them be able to access their school curriculum, access their school ground safely and more fully and meaningfully. So every child is different. Most of my kids have autism. Some of my kids have Down syndrome. And I need to look at each child. I need to understand who they are in school and even outside of, I like to go outside of school. You know, I'd like to talk to the parents. What are their personality? What do they enjoy? So that I can weave that into my therapy sessions to build those skills so that they can succeed in school. And I try to personalize everything. Like if I know that kid loves the game Trouble, right? Yeah. We will play Trouble because Trouble works on fine motor skills, but we'll do the writing and we're going to earn that Trouble for the last 5 minutes of the session. So a lot of it is like what I kind of preached at the beginning, you know, before, is a lot of it is asking questions, but also being open and fully present to hear all the answers and use the understanding that I gain to provide the best therapy possible. And that's just my philosophy. That's not everyone's, but I like to personalize my approach to every single kid because every kid is special in their own way. Right. And I also do that with, I'm also a hip hop, you know, a hip hop dancer and dance educator also. And it's the same thing, just like with the way you are with all your workouts and all the programs that you do. I have to read a room. You know what I mean? I have to get that energy and then I adjust how I teach according to the energy and what I know of the room. So everything I do between dance and as an occupational therapist is expressing, guiding, but doing a lot of listening and understanding, and then being creative in how I deliver whatever I'm doing.
And what are some of the things that you have learned in occupational therapy? Because I think it's, you know, being as though you do have kids on the autism spectrum and Down syndrome, I mean, you really, I'm sure there's been a lot of studies around how to interact with those kids and people in general on how to not make them shy away. So what are some of the mistakes that people have made in the past, and how were they able to you know, correct them, especially when you're teaching? Toxic positivity can be detrimental to a kid's learning ability, you know, or wanting to learn.
I think it's always examining intention and impact, right? So a lot, everything, whether I'm talking to teachers for the first time working with their kids or working with parents of kids with, you know, special needs to work with their kids, I have to let them know my intention. And then I always have to like measure whether my impact is what I intended and adjust accordingly. So for example, a kid is having a hard time concentrating in school and they're moving around a lot because they're like seeking a lot of sensory experience to be able to focus. So I'm going to let the mom know, hey, you know what? Like these are a couple of ideas I have in mind to try with your child. Let's collaborate and decide which one we want to try first. And then I will try it. And then if it works or it doesn't work, you know, we'll have to have that communication versus, hey, this works for autistic kids. I'm going to put the seat cushion on his thing and I'll check back in a week, I'm going to let you know if it works. You know what I mean? That's a very different approach where there's like, I'm explaining why I'm collaborating and then I'm executing versus asserting what the studies have shown works and generalizing that all kids, it's going to work for all kids. You know, I'm personalizing it and I'm also leaving space for understanding, for readjustment, you know what I mean? And personalizing it for that kid. I feel like if we can do that just in conversations and how we treat people, understanding that each person has a different human lived experience. So we don't need to like throw what we know to their situation. We need to like understand first, then we can offer our advice, our suggestions, our perspectives. But when it comes down to it, that's that person's human lived experience. That's not yours.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I was going to say, you know, what is the difference between communicating with a full-grown adult and a child? But I think it's all in the same. Like, we individually have an experience. We have the baggage. We have the good times. We have the bad times. And it all formulates whatever the movie of our life is to get us to the current, the present place. And the same thing with the children you teach every day. I'm wondering, why is it so hard for people to make that a priority first? You know, why is it so hard for people to make someone else's experience a priority first? Like, the first thing I do is I put myself in that person's shoes and I'm like, wow, you know, but why do you think people don't do that first?
I think it's some people lack empathy. Right? I feel like when you've been through a myriad of struggles, you know what I mean, because of your human lived experience and you have empathy for other people outside your lived experience, then you have more space. You tend to have more space for being more understanding and patient with people. When I feel like sometimes, and this is not everyone, but some people are so used to living in a more narrow
tunnel
experience. Tunnel vision, like very much in their privilege, that they don't have as much capacity for empathy for other people. They don't tend to want to listen to what they have to say. That's just been my experience. I feel like people who have more capacity for empathy tend to stray away from toxic positivity and are a little bit more open to the full spectrum of what someone's experience is. We don't always have time, but again, you can make time later. You know what I mean? They still have an intention to make time later, if not in the moment.
Yeah. So my next question was, you kind of alluded to it. It's how much do you think having the world at our fingertips enhances the toxic positivity? Because now we can order food, we can double tap and move on. Because I think I've gotten into, there was a while ago, before the pandemic, right? And like kind of leading into the pandemic when everyone was home, I would start to find myself just like double tapping, but not giving even the double tap the energy of somebody's post. And now I make a point to read every word of a post. And before I comment, you know, I actually think to myself, you know, how is this going to make this person feel? I put myself in, but you know, we can order food. We can damn near order a car. I think one of those places, you can order a car, right?
Yeah.
And so how much do you think technology has enhanced toxic positivity, if you will?
We all know that, you know, social media is only a part of a person. It's not the totality of a person, because not everyone shows all spectrums of their true human lived experience. And I have to say, before last year, I was a little like concerned about the fact that people are just over asserting themselves, and this toxic positivity was rampant. Even myself, I remember using the hashtag good vibes only all the time, you know? But I feel like there's a lot of awakening last year. I think maybe it's a combination of everyone going through this pandemic at the same time and having to sit with themselves more and having these like very colorful discussions with their family members and who their friends are, and also reassessing who are our true peeps who are showing up for us, you know. I feel like there's a lot more realness coming out and people showing other sides of themselves through these like social media platforms. But is there still toxic positivity? Absolutely. It's still there. Because like I said before, I feel like when people have a very narrow view of what the world is, or a very privileged view of what the world is, they don't have room for something that makes them feel uncomfortable. They don't have room for something that challenges their privilege. But I see a lot of people using their privilege to help other people now. You know, I do see more of people speaking up about mental health, about all the sides of the spectrum. Even toxic positivity pops up, obviously, on Instagram as well.
I just saw it yesterday. I was like, oh my gosh, like, I'm pretty sure that there are some people out there who look at the phrase toxic positivity and they're like, well, how isn't that being toxically positive? You know, because it's like, you know, so how would you defend toxic positivity?
Yeah, I would just say like there is nothing wrong with being positive. You know what I mean? Like being positive is an amazing thing. But when it is done in a way that minimizes another person's experience or puts people down or closes off other people or oppresses other people, that's where it becomes toxic. Mm-hmm. And so that's the distinction, really. Is when you're just expressing something, you're happy, you're sharing joy, that's amazing. Like, do that, you know what I mean? But when it comes to making statements that connect, that relate to other people's experience, if you're doing it in a way that minimizes or or shuts off the understanding of that other person's experience, that's where it's problematic. And so that's where we have to just check ourselves. And we're all humans, so it's not like we're always going to be perfect in how we show positivity to the world. That's why we have our loved ones to kind of like let us know, you know what I mean? And we also check in with ourselves too, right?
Yeah.
But overall, it's really about oppression. You know what I mean? Is what you're saying oppressing someone else's ability to say what they need or share what they need or show up fully as they are? And if that is happening, that's where intention does not match the impact. So the intent, and we just have to be accountable. If we say something toxic, that's toxic positivity, we need to own it. We need to apologize. And then if it's appropriate, we can explain our perspective and then offer an idea for a solution. You know what I mean? But we, when we just say what we have to say, we show up from a fear-based place, now defending everything we have to say, and we're not leaving space for understanding what the other person's experience is in this situation, then that's toxic positivity. And there's just no,
there's no way around it.
Ands about it.
Well, you know, it's so interesting you say that. Maybe I'm just going to use this moment as a venting session. So, you know, I'm from the hood. Like, you know, my family was on government assistance and we didn't have a lot of money. And so when, you know, my infomercial came on TV years ago, you know, I started making money. I mean, I didn't buy a house right away. I didn't, you know, I didn't like live lavishly right away or anything like that because I, you know, I was just like, oh my God, like this is crazy. But then when I did start to say, oh, like I have a career in this and I can, and I've developed a way to make this like a longer lasting career. And I remember there were times where, you know, I bought, you know, a bigger house and, you know, an extra car. And I had some extra bills because you can afford more. And so people would, and my family would be like, can I borrow $500? And then, so I would say, I don't have it because, you know, I actually have to pay these bills. And they would be like, look at how you're living. Like, I think this is, I'm using this as a venting session. And for those of you out there who may have been this person like me, or maybe you have treated someone else this way, it's just really not fair. Just because someone is elevating themselves, not better or worse than anybody else, but they're just like pushing themselves to the next level of who they want to be. And maybe they don't live the way that they used to, or maybe their relationship is a little better than it was before. Doesn't mean they can't vent or still have issues, you know, right, and struggles through where they are at that very moment.
Yeah, that's another great example from a different point of view where they're not understanding the totality of what you're experiencing. Yeah, you may have more money and you may have this, but you also probably have more bills. You have more expectations.
More money, more problems. You know that song.
Right? How do they know you're not helping someone else who is in dire need? The problem with that is there is, again, jumping to a minimized assumption. Mm. Of your human lived experience. And that's not fair to anyone. No matter if you are successful from the optics looking in, you know what I mean? Like, it does not matter. Anytime we place our opinion on another person's human lived experience without fully understanding or there's like a judgment and a assumption placed, that's toxic. That's not what we need. We need more understanding. We need more healing. We need more human connection. People need to remember when this pandemic hit, what are the things you missed the most immediately? That was human connection. Mm-hmm. Yeah, human interaction. Have like sharing and listening and connecting on a deep level in person with that energy and that full presence. That's what people missed. You know, when we get busy and everything opens up again, we need to be careful that we're not running into this quickness of life, this shortness where we don't have time to understand. So we're just going to, this is what I think you're going through, or like, just get over it. You're being dramatic. You know what I mean? All those microaggressions, right? Instead, I hope that we remember what we were scared to lose or that we missed the most. And we apply that so that we are different. Well, that we'll never be the same again. You know, that, you know, all the disadvantages of immediate, you know, things provided through technology, right? That made us speed up so fast to the point where toxic positivity was just a normal everyday thing that maybe now we're going back to basics of being better humans and listening to each other more and understanding each other more beyond what we know.
I'm gonna put you on a spot here because you know, while there may have been a lot of families that still got together during Thanksgiving last year, I think, you know, more than half the country didn't. And so I think that's where a lot of drama happens in just in your home or when families eventually get together. And so to eliminate toxic positivity, to bring peace and healing to a family, what are some activities that families can do like immediately when they get together? Before they get around the dinner table and before they get into the gossip of he said, she said, what are some things that they can do like to break the ice in the family to just kind of bring peace and love and understanding to the family? Because I just feel like, you know, pent up aggression is real. And
yes, it is.
And that happens from misunderstanding. It all happens from misunderstanding. So what do you think some families can do when they start to like meet up again and really fellowship with each other?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So I think, okay, and you talked about this before, I think in a IG Live or a podcast about love languages. Oh yeah, you and Scott talked about love languages, right? So we need to understand in a family and also every culture, they have, there's a dominant love language, you know what I mean? Or there are dominant love languages within the family dynamic. And so for example, in Filipino culture, it's acts of service. My mom cooks for me. She will, you know, my parents picked me up and brought me to all my rehearsals for for band or dance practice or whatever, you know. All those acts of love. But did I ever hear I love you my entire life? No, I didn't. That was an adult thing that was brought in more from my American upbringing that I brought into the space. Mm-hmm. We basically, all our siblings had to say it to our parents a bunch of times for them to get comfortable saying it back to us. And then that became part of our, you know, family culture. So if I'm just going to use my family as an example, sitting around a table and like the way me and Dustin do where we pull like, you know, question cards and, you know, we have these like deep talks, that's not going to work in my family. You know what I mean? Because verbal expression is not it. You know what I mean? It's like, it's more like acts of service is our dominant thing. So maybe for our family, it's going to be mainly cooking together. You know what I mean? It's going to be, you know, cleaning the house, the yard together. You know, it's going to be an activity together that maybe will lead to some conversations afterwards or during. You know what I mean? So I think families have to take a hard look at the love languages that are dominant in the family and then start there, because it's not going to be the round table discussion from the beginning. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah,
especially if that culture does not operate from that mode of expressing love.
I just had this, like you're saying, like you're talking about your family and I'm listening, but I'm also processing my family. And so I just had the craziest revelation. So, you know, Scott and I did our love language. I actually talked about this a couple times, but so we did our love language and my love language is not, you know, words of affirmation. It's not acts of service. It's okay. But quality time is my thing.
Yeah.
Right. So,
yeah,
but I never really knew that. And I was just thinking of my family. And so I'm actually going to New York next week. You know, I talked to my family and I was like, what do you guys want to do? Like, you know, I want to do this or whatever. And I was just like, you know what? I should just like get an Airbnb and just have all my family come and we have a cookout and whatever. And immediately everyone was like, oh, yeah. And I just realized that I believe that my family's love language is quality time.
Yes.
Because I don't think that, we have a lot of like, we do have a lot of things in our family that if it were to be talked about, it could be like heavy and stuff. But I feel like a lot of people heal with us just being together. And personally, and I don't know if this is like a negative thing, but I always like look down upon that. Like I always like, we need to talk about it. But, you know, I have had conversations with my mom about certain things, which has been great.
Yeah.
But I think quality time at least brings a sense of healing. And I'm just like, wow. So maybe it's like finding just your family's love language, like you said, that can be really beneficial. And even just with my friends, like even Alex, who produced the podcast, and Steve, like, you know, it's like for me, it's not necessarily what I'm going to like say to them when I see them, or, you know, them giving me a gift because they haven't. I'm just like, let's just go to an Italian restaurant, hang out, and have wine. Like, I'm so excited. So it's just validating my personal love language, which is quality time, which is so weird, you know?
And it's not so weird, and it's interesting. Like, yeah, it's good. It's good to, when you know it, it's good because it's good to have these concepts to apply. And also our love languages are different. Like my love language with my family is different than my love language with Dustin, which is going to be my different love language than you as my friend, you know? So it's always interesting to look at these love languages and even to talk about it sometimes, you know, with your different people in your life. And taking one other step further, how you receive love is sometimes different than how you also like to give love. Right. So for me, I'll just use Dustin as an example. How I like to receive love from him is definitely what we have in common is quality time is for sure. Like quality time is definitely something we have in common, but I do like to receive gifts from him because like getting a jewelry from him is meaningful for me because when I wear it, it carries the energy of him and I love keeping it close to me. Now with my family, I appreciate the acts of service, you know, because that's how we grew up, you know? And so it's different. And how I like to give, I love giving words of affirmation, which, you know, I like to give words of affirmation, but receiving it, I'm always a little like weird about
it. But it's so interesting. It's interesting because it's funny for your birthday, Dustin actually said, he's like, I like showering him with gifts is like the best thing. Like it's interesting that he knew that. And I'm not with anyone. Words of affirmation is just not my thing. Like, I'm just like, I don't need it. However, it's interesting with you. Like when you leave me a video message on the phone, like I can tell like you love it better than text. Like, and I have to say to myself, I'm like, this is exactly how he likes to show and express like his love for somebody. And because it's not the way I receive best, but like, I have to sit there and I'm like, I'm going to literally embrace the way he's speaking to me because I know that Arnell is like really feeling what he's saying. So it's just like really cool to like, you know, experience that from your side as well. I really love how, you know, we touched on toxic positivity, but we also, there's also a solution and just getting people to be able to not just look at it as like, either I'm receiving this the wrong way or I'm doing this the wrong way, but how to communicate with someone and how to receive communication, if you will. But I like to ask all my guests, like, what is your definition of trust and believe? And the reason why I'm excited to hear yours is because you definitely work with a broad scope of people and different types of people. And so what is your definition of trust and believe?
I think trust and believe, I see it both inwards and outwards. Inwards being that you have to trust yourself. And you have to believe in your unique purpose in the world, your voice, what your soul is telling you, you know, what your heart is telling you. And then trust and believe is also how do your actions and your words, both your actions and your words, convey an energy that allows other people to trust and believe you. You know what I mean? And it's usually, it can't be exclusive. It can't just be your words. It needs to be your words and your actions. And so, I think it's an inward process, and it's an outwards giving process. And I feel like maybe if the world does a little bit more of both, we'll have a better future to look forward to.
Well, I think it all comes down to communication being action oriented, like to receive and to give is both an action, and you have to commit to it 100%. Arnel, thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited for people to hear this. I mean, I'm so excited people were able to hear you talk and just to hear how they can really help themselves be better to other people and also help themselves know how they should be treated by other people and the lesson and the solution to be able to make, you know, positive interaction a part of their daily lives. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. So much love and respect for you and all you're doing. Love you.
I love you.